22 to Las Vegas this era. Things happening there, as we predicted they would, regarding the massacre. Direct connections, can't prove it, but interesting things going on. The Las Vegas Metro Police have decided to end the ability of people to listen in on their conversations. Dispatch center, you name it. There has also been a number of shootings recently. Dead homeless men, we'll talk about that as well with Gary. But the shutdown of the communication listening is pretty interesting. There's a story, I guess it's in the Las Vegas Sun. When a gunman opened fire, there's a lie right away. As soon as the thing starts, there's a lie. When a gunman, Stephen Paddock, opened fire on October 1st on a crowd of concertgoers from a Las Vegas Strip hotel, anyone with a police scanner, radio scanner, or internet connection could listen in on Metro Police radio traffic as the mayhem unfolded. "It's coming from upstairs in the Mandalay Bay," an officer shouts into his radio as gunfire rains down from the 32nd floor. Another lie. "Halfway up, I see the shots coming down from Mandalay." Oops, contradiction there. Halfway up, that's not the 32nd floor. All right. "Scanners, which can be readily purchased at electronic stores or online, can be programmed to search for police and fire transmissions, which can then be made even more widely available by groups that stream them on websites such as broadcastify.com. But that's all over, at least when it comes to Metro Police communications. Metro recently encrypted its radio channels, rendering scanners available to the public obsolete. So there's another piece of fallout from the massacre. But we've got something else going on. It's the murder of homeless men, admitted now by Metro to be done by the same person or the same gun, apparently. And without question, one of the most accomplished and brilliant people when it comes to the entire Las Vegas and national political scene is Gary Holland, who is back with us tonight to talk about this. Hello, Gary. So no more scanner traffic.
Yeah, if you remember, right, good evening, Jeff. How's everything going?
We're there.
Everything's going
We're
wonderful.
Here. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you remember a few months ago, we had a conversation. I had told you about this. This happened actually a couple of years ago. I want to say maybe like 3 or 4 years ago even now. They got a big grant from Homeland, and Las Vegas Metro was one of the first major police departments in the United States to get digital communication, which is closed circuit. You haven't been able to actually, the scanner or any radio for Las Vegas Metro went dark about, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. Yeah, if you go back.
Interesting how this story just popped out today.
Yeah, you know, if you can go back in the archives, and I tell everybody they should subscribe to your archives. I don't know why they don't. And if, you know, at this point, you know, it's more than just shows. This is reference material. People understand the archives of yours goes back 23, 24 years. And you can go back to 1990s interviews. And I've done this with interviews that you've did in the past with people who have been died a long time ago. But the referenced material that they were explaining at that time holds true for today.
It's amazing.
So, you know,
it's eerie to listen to.
It is, but it's like an encyclopedia of just truth and knowledge. And for the low amount of money it costs a month to access that 23 years, it's like you're paying a little bit of subscription a month to get volumes of information, logic, truth. And you can't find that anywhere else. You ain't going to find it in a library. That's all been, the books have been purged out of public libraries a long time ago. You're definitely not going to get it in a bookstore. They've been purged. And the only truth you're really going to get, and the internet's been scrubbed off, obviously, as you can tell.
Yeah.
Your archives, people just don't realize the amount of information, because if an interview was done in 2005 with Sherman Skolnick or now in Stang,
yeah,
what they were saying in 2005, they were warning back then what is going on now. So they, you know, and stuff that they would talk about back then, and the interviews you've had over the years, And no, no, and you know, first of all, I'm going to tell everybody, no, Jeff didn't put me up to saying this.
I didn't know you were going to say anything about this. Thanks.
No. I'm explaining to people the archives because it's more than just interviews. This is rich information. Information that doesn't stay old, you know, get old. This is that lives with the ages.
It's a, you know what it is? It's a complete record in archival form of the decline and fall of America is what it is. Sad to say.
Yeah, think about it. You started your show right when Bill Clinton was maybe
94.
A quarter of his way through his first term.
Yeah.
And from that point on, you covered in your archives OKC. Your show was there before OKC even happened.
Ruby OKC. Ridge, OKC. It just
Ruby
went on
Ridge,
and on.
Waco. It never ended.
Yeah.
It's just gotten worse. But if people do go out of the archives, they can go back to one of our shows we did a couple of months ago, and I had told you even at that time when they said, oh, people were putting on YouTube recordings of Metro, you know, conversations. And I had told you at that time, I said, that's impossible. No general public has access to Metro's
I remember you saying that. Where did these recordings come from?
They had to come directly from Metro or somebody who had access to the closed circuit communications.
They had to crack that.
Yeah,
they had to crack somehow the encryption. And there are probably some hackers out there that can do it. So
possibly, but, you know, this is like, this encryption, by the way, is a very high encryption. It's like a, I forgot the name of it. It's kind of like what it would be like a three-prong or whatever they call encryption, where it's like multi-stacked encryption. So it's the signal's constantly changing. So the encryption's always changing. So if you break the encryption, you know, a day later, that encryption's been changed again. So you'd have to try to do it all over again. What my suspicion was that all these recordings were pre-approved, pre-screened. And by the way, we don't know if it was done on a sound, you know, in a studio, these communications, we have no clue of way of knowing this. But I can definitely say no one took a Bearcat scanner and recorded this stuff. Because, like I said, I've had.
I remember when you said that. I remember very clearly. Yeah.
Yep. And I actually have an app. It wasn't Broadcastify. That's one of them. But there's a it used to be even on just even TuneIn Radio. The other different apps used to offer police band, you know, in all the different cities.
Mm-hmm.
But years ago, and how I knew this is because one day on one of the I had a, you know, because I had the old police Bearcat scanner. One day the Las Vegas Metro completely went dark, went off. And this was, like I said, about three or four or five years ago.
Mm-hmm.
My memory doesn't give me full recollection. But what had happened was Homeland came in with their big grant. Metro took the grant and went closed circuit. And at that time, there was no way publicly of listening on Metro's communications anymore. And they haven't had that. If, like I said, if someone said, oh, I recorded this and they put it on YouTube, no.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't record it. They got the recording from somewhere. They put it up there from somebody. But that was done in-house.
Hmm.
If it wasn't done in-house, it was someone maybe up in, you know, high up in security in the casinos, too, because I think they have access to that band, too. For Metro. But why they went digital, supposedly all police departments are supposed to be doing this within the next 10 years.
That's what I read, yeah.
Yeah, and you know why they're doing this? Because it has to do with incident of communication, they can do this, do that. They don't want people knowing what they're doing anymore.
Of course not. No.
No.
This is all from, this is Israeli training, this is what the Israelis do, it's all scrambled over there. Nobody gets a Bearcat scanner and listens anymore. It's done.
No.
Now, what about these homeless men who are being shot? We got a serial killer there.
A serial killer, yeah. They've already, I was watching the news the other night. They had a grainy security video. I want to say it was near downtown somewhere. And this guy, they're pulled up in a black Escalade. The guy walks up and shoots the guy. Right on security camera. Now, it could be either a serial killer or it could be a gang initiating members, because gang members do the same thing. Where they do the initiation, when they're going to jump a member in, one of the part of the initiations, a lot of times with a lot of these gangs, is they go shoot people.
Ah, interesting.
It's an, so it could be one way or the other. It could either be gang initiation, or it could just be some psychopath. Uh-huh. Psychopaths don't ride around in black Escalades. Usually people who ride around in black Escalades are people, you know, who are dealing, you know, or some
maybe
could possibly have wealthy parents, and this is a spoiled
brat.
That's
a, what, $60,000 or $70,000?
Right,
isn't that a $60,000 or $70,000 rig now, a Cadillac?
Oh, yeah, the Escalades, yeah, they run $75,000, $80,000. And then that's, you know, even I think that's the factory unit, which is like your basic level.
Wow.
And then if you put the added extras, the rims, and the, all the specialty stuff they do with these things, go up over $100,000.
And that's one of Cadillac's biggest sellers. Are they all over town? Do you see them? I guess you see them.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, who uses most a lot of them Escalades is in a lot of them rappers. So, like the rap videos and the rappers, they all have Escalades. The basketball players, the you know, a lot of these sports stars that are, you know, they're African American, black, you know, they ride in this. It's all about, it's a thug or the gang life, whatever they want to call it, the thug life, the gangster life, whatever they call it.
Yeah.
And so that's what it is. So they use these Escalades. So this is what these guys are riding around in, an Escalade. Because, as a matter of fact, what they did in the video on the news I'd seen the other night, they actually circled around. They actually stalked this guy, this homeless guy, a couple of times. They were driving around and circled around, I can't think, a couple of times. Then they passed by slowly again, and the Escalade actually went off the camera. Then the guy walked up really slow, and then you see him pull the gun out, and he just shoots him.
Really?
And
so these are drive-bys? Is that what they are?
Yeah, the guy gets out of the car, walks right up to the homeless, and he shoots him.
Wow.
He's killed two already. Uh-huh. Two have been seriously injured. They're in the hospital. Hmm. Questionable if they're going to survive or not. They don't know yet. But this guy's been doing this, and he's actually doing it. I've seen a map in the paper. It seems like he's kind of spreading out himself, too, because he's not just doing it in one concentrated area. One night he'll be on the west end of town. He'll do like one night at the east side. You know, he's like all over the place. Where a lot of the homeless are, though, and I noticed the areas he is would be where large concentrations of homeless, but not too many people where there would be witnesses. You see, you know, because you know, and a lot of the homeless ain't gonna, they don't talk. They have a code where they just don't believe in talking to the police.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not really going to talk to the police. Neighborhoods this guy was shooting them in aren't the type of people in these neighborhoods. They mind their own business and they keep to themselves. And even if they did see something, they wouldn't take the risk of exposing themselves, something like that. So, and it's sad to say, it's a sad, you know, sad state of affairs. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in these neighborhoods, I could, in a way, you have to understand, you know, these neighborhoods are, like they're the third world. Look, this little miniaturized third world countries within a first world country.
It's compartmentalized. It's all compartmentalized, and this is it's a whole little social strata is what it is, and you don't get in. How interesting. Yeah.
And you know, the homeless by the way, the homeless problem's even getting worse. Even out here, I've noticed it. And they've done, you know, here the cruelty they show the homeless here is just beyond belief. Because, you know, most of the homeless, people don't understand, a lot of the homeless in Las Vegas actually live under the city, in the sewer.
Now, I'm looking at pictures right now, and there are some enormous concrete structures underground that these people apparently, they get along. They don't hassle each other much. They're just trying to survive. A lot of them are formerly, you know, reasonably successful, lower class white, blue collar types, and they're trying to survive.
Yep. Most of the homeless you see here is mostly white. There is some black, but mostly the black hang around the areas where there's only two homeless shelters in the whole city. So, and they hang down that Mission District over there off Main and, you know, Maine and Owens and that area over there, there's two homeless shelters. Anyway, they hang out mostly down there. But most of the ones who live in the tunnels are usually are whites. And a lot of Native American, too. from the tribes, probably, you know, the Navajos tribe, you know, it's because they have a lot of, you know, major Indian tribes in this Southwest, and they, for some reason, they like to come here, and a lot of them end up homeless. I just don't know why, you know, maybe they run out of money, whatever happens, but the amount of homeless I've been seeing, and I'm talking not the usual drug addict looking homeless. I'm talking homelessness that are living in their cars. Is even out here, it's getting remarkable. Because they just did a study in Southern California where there's like 355,000 homeless that they know of. And it's increasing 55,000 a year.
Here's speaking about the underground aspect of the homeless in Las Vegas, there's a video here. It's pretty interesting. It's on the Daily Sheeple site. And it talks about just what Gary was saying. And let me just play a little bit of this because it's got a lot of interesting pictures.
Something far less enticing, something far more sinister. 200 miles of twisted labyrinth, flood tunnels that serve as home to 1,000 homeless men, women, and children crisscross this subterranean world beneath the city. A great deal of research has been written about these tunnels and the unfortunate people who inhabit them. One such book is called Beneath the Neon, Life and Death in the Tunnels of Las Vegas, written by Matthew O'Brien. Armed with a flashlight, a tape recorder, an expandable baton, O'Brien explored the Las Vegas flood control system for more than 4 years. His book chronicles his explorations in this seedy Vegas underworld. He follows the footsteps of a psychotic killer. He braces against a flood. He parties with naked crackheads. Learns how to make meth. He learns that art is most beautiful where it's least expected. And that there are no pots of gold under the neon rainbow.
Anyway, you get the idea. 200 miles of these tunnels. For flash flooding, and it's not sewers, yeah. They're flood controls, what they are.
Yeah, so they're flood control tunnels, but what happens is every year, we get, think about it, people understand about the desert, like, it's different from a lot of other places. Like, if you get an inch of rain back east, the ground absorbs it, you really don't notice it. Mm-hmm. You get an inch of rain here, it's like getting 2 feet of rain somewhere else, because the inch of rain has nowhere to go. It just basically, the desert makes its own, like, rivers. So what they did over the years, they got, you know, Flamingo, all these streets that used to go run west to east, all the major streets.
Yeah, here. West-east, right? Yeah.
Yep. Most people don't realize them streets were built on, basically on top of natural flood channels they were. They just basically built the road on top of natural flood channels through the desert. So Flamingo, Tropicana, Spring Mountain, you know, Sahara, Charleston, all these major roads that run from west to east at one time used to just be flood channels. So what happens is the water flows from west to east because it's like higher elevation and it heads to Lake Mead. That's what was supposed to do. Naturally, what they used to do is just flood out neighborhoods left and right, and you would end up with these flash floods and people were getting killed. So what they did is throughout town, they built all these flood channels. You can, some would go above ground, it goes in, and they all go into underground because it's mm-hmm. built underneath the city. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people, they live down there. They actually set up like almost, they have electricity down there. I don't know how they tap into electricity down there, but there's certain areas that they have electricity. They basically have an apartment within a tunnel.
Yeah. Wow.
Thousands live down there.
Yeah, they say 1,000, but I'm sure it's more than that.
Oh, no, it's way more than that. You're talking thousands that are living down there.
Right.
Yeah, they're not gonna, they don't want to admit the problem. And cruelly, what I'm saying about here is what they've done is, like, the homeless used to set up these tents, and what they'll do is they'll go into these where they have, like, maybe, like, 6-7 tents set up on an empty lot. They're not hurting anybody. It doesn't, you know, that you can't even really notice them. What the police will do will go in there.
Right.
And they'll basically chase them out of there. And then they come in with these, city comes in with their scoopers and the dump truck, and all the homeless's belongings get scooped up and thrown away. And they're sent walking, whatever's on their back.
Right.
So they do that all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's you know, look, homeless, they know, you know, some want to be there, but a lot of them don't. And even, you know, the way they're treated, the cruelty you see, it's just sometimes it's just unbelievable. I mean, they've doing the same thing in Southern California, too, where they go, like I've told you this story before, they go in there, people are sleeping in their cars. And
LAPD? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The sheriff's department down there.
Yeah.
They go, people, yep, and they go right there. And they do that here, too, here in town. I know I've heard stories they've done the same thing. But down there, it's done in such a weird, cruel fashion, where they'll go up to a homeless car with a canine unit, you know, hit hard as they can. They hit the windows, get up, and they start screaming through the loudspeaker of the police truck, and you know, the police car. They have these, you know, I guess they're, you know, the PA systems they have in their, you know, when they tell a suspect to get out of the car, that type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And they'll scream, and then they'll have the people will be thrown out of their cars, and they have the canine dogs barking at them, wanting to bite them. And they're searching their car, and then the people can't prove they have insurance. And then what next thing you know, they're coming with the tow truck. They tow the car away. They don't allow them to get any of their belongings in the car because they tow the car away. And they leave them sitting in the parking lot just basically with what they were wearing when they got off the car.
Wow. Not good.
And they say, well, if you want your car, you can come get it. You get your insurance. You go to the tow yard. Problem is, when you get to the tow yard, they charge. First of all, the police departments are always the owners of these tow companies, these wrecking yards, always have somebody who's in the police department that's either a friend or relative or somebody. And you go to these tow yards, you get your car towed away. One night, even when. That's about $400 or $500 to get your car out of impound.
Oh yeah, a lot of people can't do it. They've lost their cars. Their cars are gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they can't get their things
exactly.
out of the cars either. It's inhuman. This country has lost its heart in so many ways. It's been taken away by the media, by the political culture that we live in. It's sickening. Back in a minute with Gary Holland as we continue on this Wednesday night. Talking with Gary Holland about a lot of things. Gary's knowledge is extraordinary. So many areas, he has a great foundation and depth. This story he sent today, very interesting. I'll post it tonight. The Marine Corps, this is the one you sent about the Marines. Very interesting.
Yeah.
They're pushing quadcopters, drones, if you will, and video game warfighting for every Marine squad. Now, this is all about desensitizing people that are out there to kill. They're turning our troops more and more into automatons, into basically robots. That's what they are. Nobody's entitled to make decisions anymore. They just do. But tell us more about this. You were a Marine. This is very interesting. They didn't do this when you were in there.
No, but they had the older years and years ago, they had these simulators that was pretty much the same thing, but you know, a lot more bulkier, not as compact, and you know, commercialized.
Sure.
But these were realistic situations. But what they've been doing in these games, because they're games, what they're encouraging. Basically, they've done. By the way, I don't remember the name of. There was a PlayStation game maybe 10 years ago that was created. And it even they admitted in the commercial, with the help of the U, created with the technical expertise and consultation of the U.S. Army.
Yeah, the same programmers. Same programmers are teaching the military to kill or programming the games for your kids. Okay? That's what that's the story.
Well, it's the same games. As a matter of fact, they there's some of the games that are so realistic. Call of Duty, that's one of the name of the games.
Mm-hmm.
Call of Duty is as close in a avatar world as you'll get to real life combat. I mean, it's realistic. The sounds, the images, and mm-hmm. and the graphics is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so now what the and these DOD, well, they're Mossad, CIA creations. We know that. And with the DOD, psych, and they create these games. And what they're going to do is they're probably just going to pump these guys all day and all night and make it look like fun. And, you know, it's something exciting to do for the afternoon instead of, you know, drilling outside or, you know, you're outside in the middle of the summer. You're going to love to be in an air conditioned, you know, playing video games all afternoon. And these games are all, you know, designed to make you all excited and have fun.
Right.
But the games itself is rewiring the brain. And the person playing the game don't realize that. Because by the time they do try to figure it,
they're already done.
And
killing is a reflex. It's a reflex. It's an instantaneous reflex. And the cops are getting the same kind of treating. That's why cops killed more people last year than the year before. I forget how many. Well over 1,000 Americans were executed by police last year.
Well, at least you know, you can tell that the Israeli training's working. They're getting the results. You sending training officers, who are the main ones who go to Israel to get the training, by the way, because they're the ones who do the they're the head of the training units of these police departments.
Yeah.
So whatever knowledge that person gets in Israel, they're going to pass it on to all the trainers, all the way down the precinct level. And then you got the new training, which I don't know how many years they've been doing this already. It's been a few years.
It's got to be 10,
this isn't
10
something
or more.
New. Yeah.
No, it's
this
been
isn't
around.
Something new. They've been sending them to Israel for quite a while to do training. And
these are police chiefs. These are the police chiefs in your town, sheriffs. Doesn't matter. They go there, they get trained to do the same things, follow the same protocols that the IDF and the Israeli police use against the Palestinians. Same thing. They're treating us like Palestinians, like we're dirt.
Well, we're the goyim. That's where the cattle. And no, not people of the world, where they try to say, I've heard so many times, the goyim means the people of the world. Wrong. That's a lie.
That's an idiotic thing. Yeah, you know, I want to ask a question. We know that police departments will only accept applicants who score within a certain, like it's up to 105 IQ. They don't want people too smart. They don't want them too dumb. They want them to where they're going to follow directions and all the rest. I think it's 100 to 105, maybe 110. That's the ideal for police departments. But you're giving these people the power of life and death over everyone else, basically, that they come into contact with. And I don't know psychologically how that plays out, except when I look at statistics and I see over 1,000 Americans executed by police. God knows how many injured. And this is what we know about. But these people, when they get a gun, are dangerous. When you're pulled over in a traffic stop, you're endangered. I mean, this is not a joke. It's not Officer Bob or Officer Nancy anymore. These people are potentially your executioners. You got to get your hands up. You better have your license and your insurance stuff right there in the glove box or somewhere handy in the console so you can hand it when you're asked to. And if you are, here's another problem. If you have a CCW, and the cop will know that in an instant, they'll come to your car not knowing if you're carrying a weapon. The first thing you should do, and I read this and I paid close attention, is tell the officer, I do have a CCC or CCW permit. I am not armed. There is no arm in my car. None. Tell them the truth. Or if they ask you and you say, yes, I have one, they'll ask you where it is. Say it's on my right hip. They'll say, would you please get out of the car? They'll then ask you to put your hands on the car, and they'll disarm you. And they'll check to see if everything is in order. So you want to be in that position? I don't know. And it's to the point now where a lot of people with CCWs, I think, I don't know if it's wise to go out armed or not anymore, Gary.
Yeah, I was with a acquaintance of mine a few years ago. He's a CCW holder. Got pulled over by the police. And this was in North Las Vegas. Pulls him over. First thing he does is pull out a CCW permit that he has, like a license. He holds that in his hands, puts both of his hands out the window, and where the police can see him.
Out the window, yeah.
Out the window. He holds him out the window. Police walks up. He says, I am a CCW holder. There's my permit. And they see the permit. And then he says, I am armed right now. He's telling the police this. I am armed right now. Please give me specific directions on what you would like me to do from at this point to where you can disarm me. And give me instruction. And so that's what they did. They told him exactly what to do, and it, you know, went smoothly.
Right.
The problem is you got a combination, I understand. You got Israeli training. Okay, you got a lot of the, by the way, they have a psych profile they put on the new recruits in the police department. And if you mainly go a little bit more towards the psychopath end of the spectrum, that's the ones they look for.
Yeah.
And so you
and how do they put these profiles together? Excuse me, Gary, but they have a profile on you. You'll be rated somehow, said the International NCIC, National Computer Criminal Information Center. They'll have a profile on all everybody now, basically. You'll be rated. You'll have some kind of a potential danger or threat rating as an individual, correct?
Yes.
When they come up to your car, they'll know.
Yeah. Oh, they know. I mean, unless the car is stolen, and if the car is stolen, they usually call for backup anyway. Because if the car is reported stolen, they automatically assume the person in that car is armed. You can only assume that. You have to assume the worst. If you're, you know, your life's on the line, you better assume the worst.
Yeah.
So they call in backup, and then they de-escalate the situation at that point. You know, they know who's most of the time who's in these cars. They know there's a threat assessment, you know, this person.
Right.
You know, look, they knew it. Don't tell me that it was by accident coincidence that LaVoy Finicum got blown away.
Mm-hmm.
There was no accident in that. There was no misunderstanding and no miscommunication in that.
None.
That
was an execution.
It was an execution, of course. Make an example. And then try to cover that up even. Did a bad job. I think the family's suing, if I heard right.
Yes, they are. They got one FBI agent who they now... have even the government's prosecuting him because he lied. He fired two rounds into LaVoy's SUV with three other people in it after he had pulled over in the snowbank and gotten stuck. So they got this one FBI agent who fired two rounds. That's what they admit. So anyway, sad.
The thing is, with the FBI, they seem to get away with a lot because...
You got it.
If Ruby Ridge, not one FBI agent was prosecuted. Not the sniper, I forgot his name.
Horiuchi.
Horiuchi. Lon Horiuchi. Never spent a second in jail, not even a second in a lawyer's office trying to defend himself. Executed Randy Weaver's wife with her baby in her arms, blew her right away, then killed the son. And then after that, reportedly... had went and had bragged about what he did and you know, ran his mouth about it even. And, you know, type of
and then,
guy
hey,
dad
can
does
you
that.
Can you imagine? Let me just jump for a second here to Minneapolis. Their police department's been hiring Somalis for diversity. And the
Good
Somali
luck.
Cop, as we know, executed that white Australian woman who had walked over to the driver, this Somali cop's partner, to ask some questions. She was in her nightgown, her pajamas. And a Somali cop leaned over in front of his partner, who was in the driver's seat, and shot this woman to death. There has never been an investigation because the cop refuses to participate. Can you imagine in the Somali community how he's hailed as a hero? This is what they do.
And by the way, the Somali community in Minneapolis now, I've heard, just like Lewiston, Maine, they have a lot of political stroke. So they probably had their Somalian Justice League or whatever they would call themselves.
Right.
And they went down. They went to the commissioner of the which is the former police commissioner was a lesbian woman who didn't even bother to come back after the shooting had happened. She stayed on vacation skiing wherever she was.
Did she quit? And I think she quit.
Resigned from the ski resort.
Right.
Like,
she quit. I don't want to come home to that mess.
Resignation.
I don't want to come home to that mess. Sounds like San Francisco.
She probably already knew. She knew as soon as she would hit the office, the Somalian Political League, Action League, was there and dictating what goes on. So when they went in there and said, this is the way it is, we will put a lot, we will riot, do this and that, you will not investigate him and you'll hire more. And it was, yes, yes, sir. And when? How many more do you want us to hire? Because that's what they did. Because they run the show.
Make you sick.
Oh, they do.
Right.
You know, Lewiston, Maine, like I've told you that story before, Jeff, they literally, the whole downtown looks like a little Mogadishu. You had restaurants having to literally close and run, you know, basically close down and shut doors. And we're talking fast food, nationwide chain fast food restaurants.
Wow.
One I particularly know about because I have a very close friend who was a general manager of a lot of fast food franchises back there. They had to close the ones in the air because the constant mess that they were making, the constant problems they were having with them. They were going to the bathrooms and still don't know how to use public restrooms.
Yeah, they're pissing and crapping on the floor next to the toilets. They don't want to learn.
They have no clue.
No, there's 60 IQ. They're third world people. That's where they belong. And everyone that Trump allows to be brought into this country is another act of treason, in my view. We don't need them. We can't afford them.
They don't
belong here. They're killers. They bring disease. There's no justification for it. They're to be sent home, period. That's it.
See, first of all, it's not even a third world. They're actually fourth world. I'd even say fifth world.
Good say. Good, good, good.
You would say fourth or fifth world.
It's Stone Age. It's just above
Stone Age. Yeah, just above the caveman. You know, it's basically the same thing. Beat, you know, hit the woman over the head, rape, kill, eat, you know, crap
sleep.
In the old place, lay
That's
down.
It. That's it. It's exactly right. You can take, look, here's an old cliche. You can take the black out of the jungle. You can't take the jungle out of the black, okay? You can laugh all you want, but that's the bottom line here. These people bring their jungle culture with them, their third or fourth world culture with them. They will not give it up. They agglutinate together in their own enclaves and cities. They begin to exercise, as Gary said, political clout, and the whites are afraid. They back down. Don't get me going.
Well, see, that article I sent you the other day, one of them social justice warrior types in Germany, she was a
I read it last hour.
Ladies.
I read the quote. Yeah. She finally seen the light.
She said, Germany's lost. I'm going to Poland. Germany's gone. There's no saving Germany anymore. That's what she said. It's gone. And so when you have the SJW warriors jumping ship, you know you're in bad shape. At that point, you know it's unbearable at that point.
That's
Europe's
right.
Just unbearable. You see what all the countries that are just not, they're not even going to be, it's not going to be Europe in 10 years. Not in them countries anyway. Hungary, Poland, the Slovakia. If you notice, it's the Eastern Bloc nations that want to preserve
They still have some strength of character as a people. The Westerners have been so brought down by the liberal communist media, by the lifestyle, by political liars and frauds, and then above all, the European Union of Brussels.
What Russia, the Eastern Bloc nations remind me of? The old American West.
Interesting.
When people had character, they honored their women. They worked the land. They're hardworking people.
They had ethics.
Nice people.
Of course.
They had ethics, and above and most, their family and their heritage meant everything.
Well said.
And yeah, nowadays, exactly. The heritage means nothing anymore. See, you know, years ago, I used to get really mad. You remember, Jeff, how many years ago do you remember when this country started becoming, when you used to see on TV the word, the buzzword for this country changed, went from a country to what they started using this term, the marketplace. Remember that term they were kept using for our country? And I would correct you that, well, the marketplace, I said, this isn't a marketplace, this is a country. But they kept using that word for years, the marketplace.
That's how you destroy a culture. It's no longer a culture, it's a marketplace, right?
It's a market. It's a market. Market, market, market. That was, you know, if you were to be, say, coming from... If you had just never heard of America, you came out of the jungle living in a mud hut your whole life and never been off the grid your whole life, you would think that America was just a international market place that had no sense of culture, no sense of country.
That's right.
No sense of...
It's a big, great big retail country. That's a consuming retail country. That's what you think.
It is. It's all about consumerism.
Yeah.
Who's going to get what? Who's got more than what? If you look at all the TV reality shows, it's just one person. Always remember the old trying to keep up with the Joneses. And that's all it is. It's just what is it? I got this. The women act disgusting. They act narcissistic, self-absorbed people.
They don't even know who they are.
They're encouraging it.
And the men are now effeminate. They don't know what their role is. They're being pushed into...
No, they're always made the idiot. They're always made the one who's screwing up. They're always... And it's now I've noticed what they've done, especially with the white male on TV. The only impression you get of the white male is he's either fat and dumb or homosexual.
That's right.
Because that's the only two characters you find anymore.
Every clip
Even
I've seen.
Even the guy's a business owner, he's an idiot, and the wife is the one who did all the work to keep the business going. That's
not the white guy that is the expert. Never.
No.
No. It's always a minority.
But that's the Zionist. That's the the ZWO. Because I don't call it the New World Order. It's not. It's the Zionist World Order.
Oh, there you go.
And the Zionist Order, the Jewish writers, the Jewish producers, the Jewish studio executives. That's why the white man is either fat and dumb or the homosexual, and that's it. Or he's the terrorist, domestic terrorist, militia.
He's a psychopath.
Redneck.
Yeah, the only...
The psychopath, redneck, and he's always supposedly the big racist, white supremacist, secretive white supremacist guy, blah, blah, blah. And that's what you get, because that's all they want you to think of a white male in this country as now, as a deadbeat loser.
You
and
got
that's
it.
All done by your favorite.
You got it.
Mr.
And those the ZWO. That's very good. Those images, when they're repeated endlessly, stick in most people. They do. They just become. They take up residence in the subconscious, and they're there. The only way to really avoid it and to protect yourself is not look at commercial television. Okay.
No.
I haven't had one
or
in now 29
realize,
years.
Realize what you're looking at when you're, you know,
you
got to
fight
it.
You got to, so you're not mesmerized, because as you sent me last week, the patents exist showing and proving that in the year 2000, 1998, 99, one particular fellow designed and perfected and patented the electromagnetic control, influence, and effect upon all those watching big screen TVs, computer monitors, all of it. The EMF coming out of that screen image has control over the human mind. It's patented. It's all there.
Yep.
That was amazing.
It is.
Yeah.
Look, if anything, the patents are getting retooled, and if the technology is just getting 10 times better every year now. It's like it's not every 10 years now, it's every year. So it's beyond beyond our mind of what technology is out there that we don't realize.
We really can't envision it. It's too far ahead. It's racing away from us. It's no contest. Gary, thanks for being here as always. Great to talk to you. We'll pick it up next time.
All right, Jeff. You have a good evening.
Thanks. You too. Gary Holland, extremely bright, well-informed, to put it mildly. Back in a minute. Hold on, and we will continue.